I believe so.
He's manning the lanes.
I was here trying to. Whilst you were asking that, when you were asking me that question, I was here trying to read what Sapna was actually meant for you before I presented it to you. Why, if you're trying to stem the spread of this virus, and it is necessary to do so. Notice the word I use, necessary. I think it's better to be safe than sorry. If you have to go to the extent now and bite the bullet now, as opposed to later on, where it could be even more catastrophic, I think good sense should prevail, and you do it now to save extra heartburn and heartache later on.
And this is the discussion that we had just a few minutes ago. The difference, and this is the opinion of Mr. Seeley and myself. This is not the opinion of Starcom and its affiliates. That one of the reasons that some countries seem to be struggling is that there isn't the adherence to the guidelines set up by the different ministries of health or health care services in those countries. When we had our lockdown, there was a lot of murmuring and a lot of complaining. It wasn't necessary. We got shut down the country. We didn't even have, what was the number that we took the lockdown at? I don't remember. Was it 50? Was it 50? I don't even remember, but it was a small-ish number that we took our lockdown at. And I don't think that we had actually reached the number at that time for initiating the lockdown. What I am most proud of as a Barbadian, and I said it last week, that I'm very patriotic. As a Barbadian, I am very proud of the vast majority of Barbadians really did adhere and still are adhering to the guidelines set up by the Ministry of Health. Yes. What was that proverb? A stitch in time saves nine?
That's it. Yes. We're a little bit more obedient than some other people. Nine. No, I'm just saying that we're a little bit more obedient than some other people, yeah. And I'm sorry for interrupting you, though, Doc. We've got a call on the line one. Let me see if they're still there. Good evening. Are you still with us?
Yes, this is Anthony Hope calling. Good evening.
All right, Hopi. Hold on. Just hold on. Just want to make sure you're still there. You don't move. I'll come back to you in a second. That's fine with you?
Yes.
Right. Fine. Just hold on, please. Doc, before we get to Mr. Hope, I've got some WhatsApp here for you, so I don't want to forget them because you know how things are getting old. Good night. Thank you for bringing this program to us. I thoroughly enjoy it. My question is, does the Doc think this would ever be over, or would we learn to adapt? If she does think it can be eradicated, what would be the most likely eradicator? And I put in parentheses, a vaccine. So I don't know if you have any idea of the vaccine, but that's what they're asking you.
Okay. Well, we're going to discuss vaccines in a bit.
So do you think that was one? Okay, will be eradicated, or we'll have to learn to live with it?
I think eventually, somebody will come up with a treatment. If we look back in history, pandemics come, pandemics go. For everything under the sun, there is a season. The question for us is, when will this end? And we don't know when it's going to end. The person who wrote the WhatsApp, they asked the question, which is a common misconception, that the vaccine is going to get rid of the virus. That's not the way that it works, because there's a difference between vaccination and treatment. The purpose of a vaccine is to prevent illness before it occurs. So vaccines are of no benefit to the 49 million who are currently infected with the COVID-19 virus. The vaccine is not going to help them. They can have treatments, which might be given by injection form, whichever treatment comes up. But the purpose of the vaccine is primary prevention, trying to prevent illness before it occurs, which is why we immunize our children, vaccinate our children in order that they are immunized.
All right.
So they go at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, get the different vaccinations, hepatitis B, haemophilus influenza B, DPT, diphtheria, pertussis, tuberculosis, and pneumococcus, all of those, mm-hmm. and at a particular schedule so that their immunity is built up against these illnesses.
And there are some people that have... Go ahead. You go ahead. Finish, Doc. Go ahead.
Right. So in time, there are going to be, if there's a vaccine, which is safe, you know, there could be a time when there are enough people who are vaccinated against the disease so that it doesn't impact on those persons who have not been vaccinated. That's called herd immunity. We could discuss that a little later if we have time. Or it will peter out on its own over time. Or somebody comes up with a treatment.
Right. I was just about to tell you that there are some people who are totally against vaccinations for whatever reason, but that's another discussion for another time. This other query says, good evening, Gredston. I have a question. I believe this is unrelated to the discussion at hand, but nevertheless, the person is asking a question. Good evening, Gredston. I have a question for the doctor. What causes a person to block out? This is something that happened to my son 2 years ago. Then this year in September, and now on Friday night, he went out and say he was standing waiting for a drink. He had ordered and collapsed. Then get back up and fall a second time. I'm just reading it as it's written. Yes, he smokes and he doesn't like to go to the doctor. Can you give some advice and hope to deal with this? Do you want me to repeat it again, or you follow what the person was trying to say?
So, my first piece of advice would be he needs to see a doctor, whether he likes it or not.
I think that's good advice right there.
Who knows whether or not the next collapse is the last collapse? There are persons who have heart abnormalities. There are persons who have abnormalities, for example, with the rhythm of their heart, with the rate of their heart. There are persons who could have clots in their lungs. There are persons who could have seizures. And there are so many things that can cause a person who is standing to collapse. Too many to mention, but what I always say that it's not normal for somebody who is young and supposedly in good health, because if you're young, you're really not expected to just be collapsing. And the fact that he smokes might be a contributing factor, but I go back to my first piece of advice. He needs to see a doctor as quickly as possible to get investigated.
All right. This other one says...
So I hope that the writer is able to convince her son or his son of
to go and see the doctor.
To see a doctor.
Yes, okay. There's a quick follow-up. And before I forget, because you know how it is with me, let me just tell the first caller that called earlier on the program, the first caller, there's somebody who's looking to get in contact with you. So if you give me a buzz here, I probably could forward the number on to you. So just be reminded of that first caller. Somebody's trying to get on to you. If you can, if you hear me again, you can tell me and I'll give you a number so you can call that person. The follow-up. There was a follow-up to the first question that we asked you. Yeah, it says here. Quick follow-up. With a vaccine, does that promote immunity indefinitely, or is it something that has to be repeated?
So one of the things that we need to remember is that this disease is a new disease. We've had time to study things like hepatitis B, and like I had said just now, we've noticed that in order to provide immunity to hepatitis B, that they're given vaccines at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months, and you get, and for other vaccines, you get boosters and so on. And it's recommended, like for example, tetanus, that every 10 years you get a tetanus booster. Chickenpox is one of those illnesses that if you get it in life, more than likely you're going to be immune to getting chickenpox again. We don't know enough about COVID-19 to know if lifelong immunity is conferred or whether or not the vaccine will be a one dose vaccine or multiple dose vaccine. These are things I'm sure that the scientists are investigating. As a matter of fact, when it was researching, I think that there are 86 vaccines at present in preclinical trials, meaning that they're still at the lab stage, and 36, which are at clinical trial stage. Let me confirm that for you. sorry, 86 in preclinical, so this is where they're doing it in the lab and investigating them in animals, and 52 in clinical trials. There is a race to find a vaccine and to find one quick, fast, and in a hurry. Normally, it takes a good few years, 7, 10 years to develop a vaccine, because you have to think about it. You are going to be manufacturing something which is going to be given to the population at large. You have to spend time making sure that this vaccine is safe, and not only that it's safe, but that it is going to do what you are making the vaccine to do. So part of the clinical trial is to make sure that the vaccine actually does activate the immune system and produces the response, activates the immune system and produces the response that you want. You want it to produce. So if you don't take the adequate time to study the vaccine, then you might make something really which is not effective, or you might make something which does not do what it's supposed to do. Many years ago, I believe it was in the 1950s, there was a drug called thalidomide. Thalidomide was purported to be the best thing for people who were having difficulty sleeping, I believe. It could even be given to pregnant women. So everybody was taking thalidomide. And then they discovered that there were many children who were being born with significant limb defects. Mm-hmm. And they found that it was as a result of this thalidomide. And the reason they were able to find this out was because of time. The association was picked up after time. It wasn't something that was picked up immediately. And of course, no, thalidomide is a category X drug in pregnancy. You are not allowed to take it in pregnancy at all. And again, that's the value of time. But we don't have time on our side with COVID as yet. We don't have time. We have science, but we don't have time.
All right. Speaking of time, there's a gentleman who's been waiting for quite some time, and his name is Mr. Ho.
Yes,
and
Mr. Ho.
I think he's still here. Good evening, Mr. Ho.
Yes, sir.
Yes, please. Go right ahead.
Dr. Renia Boyce. Now, I've not listened from the beginning, but so far as listening to you, I'm not going to put forward the questions that I want to, because you said you would have gotten someone there. But in your rationale, do you think that it would be better if they work on treatments now and study how they affect the body rather than try to get a vaccine that there's no certainty at this time that it may target the virus, because it is a retrovirus, and it is very difficult because it's a mutation of SARS, yet still it attacks the other organs in the body?
It's a very valid question, Mr. Hope, and it's one of ethics. It's one of trying to determine what's most important priority. It's a very valid question. Do you want to treat the millions who are ill, or do you want to find something to prevent many more millions from becoming ill? The question stands, can they not work at the same time to try to find a treatment as well as work on developing a vaccine? I'm quite sure that there are enough scientists all around the world who will be able to work on those things separately.
Well, what we're saying is that if they work on treatment and see how the treatment works, after that they'll be able to construct a vaccine to target the way the virus is able to evade the cytosol and all that, because most viruses are able to enter the body because the cytosol has an acidic pH, and that gives the virus free right to get into the nucleus. There ain't anything you can do about that. Your cytosol must be acidic. And that's how they are able to evade the body. But then what I'm saying is if they're treating all these things and it's effective, it would then give them a research progress that would be able to help them to develop a vaccine to target it right away. But if you try to develop a vaccine based on what it's going to do after, by the time you get the results of what the vaccine does, you may have to develop a whole new situation. And by that time, seeing that SARS is a mutation, it's a mutation of SARS, it is probably put in the category of being a quasi-virus, and therefore it's going to mutate against whatever drug you use or whatever vaccine you use.
But it's the nature of viruses. It's the nature of viruses to mutate. HIV, you know, several strains and so on and so forth. It is the nature of a virus based on how it's built to mutate. And I honestly think that scientists are doing both things at the same time, because there isn't a scientist or a medical health professional who is going to know that there are millions of people dying from something and not look for a way to treat. And we are not going to speak about treatment at all, because there is a huge argument going on about particular drugs which different persons use, and they got benefits and other persons. Sorry?
In particular, hydroxychloroquine.
No, I didn't call any name, sir. You did.
I think he was suggesting that.
The issue is the big issue over hydroxychloroquine.
It was reported. It was never reported that the person who first forwarded that never used it when he came down with it. He never used it.
But the BBC reported.
No, but there are people in the medical field who are reporting that they have used it with great success, whilst there are other people in the medical fraternity who are saying that it's not working at all.
Correct.
So, the race is on to try to find a treatment, I believe, as well as a vaccine, because you want to be able to squelch this illness at both ends of the spectrum, those who are completely well and those who are currently unwell.
But the reason why I said it is that the latest report is that it reduces your memory immunity, your memory cells for immunity. So after 6 weeks, they have reported from that doctor said that the people's memory cells have been reduced by 49%. So I was wondering if it won't be wiser to treat and then based on the treatment results, then try to develop the vaccine.
All right, Mr. Hope.
And again, I say to you, Mr. Hope, I am quite certain that they are looking for treatment. Nobody wants their hospital beds to be overrun with people. They don't want 2 and 3 people in a bed. You know, they want this illness to be gone. So the way it's going to be gone would be, one, to treat those who are currently ill, and two, try to prevent as many people as possible from becoming ill. So you try your best. What do we say in Barbados again? Utmost best? You try your utmost best to not become infected in the first place. And we just hope and pray that they will, in time, find a vaccine and a treatment.
That's why they say prevention is better than cure. Anyhow, Mr. Hope.
Correct.
I don't want to run you away, but since we've been on, several people have been calling and then putting them and calling back.
What I want to say is that you just hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. In the Caribbean, where we can't afford to do all this research and buy all these test kits, we need to practice prevention. And that was excellent, Gregson.
Right.
Hit the nail on the head. Okay.
All right, Mr. Hope. Thank you kindly, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Hope.
Take care. We've got another caller. We've got a couple callers on the line, so let's see if we can get to them quickly before they hang up. Good evening.
Greg said, I'm the person that the person wanted to contact.
Oh, it's you, sir. All right. Could you kindly hold for me then, please?
Why not?
All right. Let's try this other caller here. Good evening.
Hello. Good evening.
Yes, please.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. I want to, hold it just a second. I want to first compliment the doctor for having the courage to come on to the program. She's the first doctor that has attempted to talk about COVID and the ramifications that I've been hearing. What I would like to hear her research is the vitamin D that has been, what's the right word? There's been a retrospective study indicating that persons with a vitamin D deficiency has a great chance of catching COVID. And one of the things that I've noticed is that, or discovered, is that getting a vitamin D blood test is somewhat difficult. And by difficult, I mean it's not administered at the QE In other words, you can get it at the clinics. And one of the things that people need to know is their level. So I would like to hear if she can speak about that. Thank you.
I cannot speak about vitamin D deficiency and its relation to COVID, but what I can tell you is that when you think about persons who have whatever deficiencies, anything that puts you in an at-risk state puts you at risk for developing or catching anything. With right. respect to getting a vitamin D test, it can be done at the private labs. I have not worked at the hospital for a bit, so I'm not certain if that is one of the tests that's still available at the hospital. But certainly, if it was necessary for a patient to have a vitamin D test, it would be arranged at the hospital. So either which way, the testing can be done here through the private lab, or if it's still on the blood test, done at the hospital. So it was whether the testing could be done, and I don't have any data about the specifics about vitamin D and COVID. That's something I would have to research for you.
And it's I would love to. I'd love to hear you do the research and talk about it one evening, because it's been, I triangulate between a number of doctors. People in intensive care, doctors in intensive care, and the people who analyze reports. And there is a plethora of information out there that indicates that, you know, vitamin D specifically deficiency will, you stand a great chance of catching the virus. So it's one of the things I would love to hear you talk about.
Okay, certainly I will look into it for you, but one of the good things is that we live here in the tropics, and we have a healthy source of vitamin D. Not to say that there aren't people who are here who are not vitamin D deficient, but certainly the vast majority of our population has a healthy store of vitamin D by the nature of living here in the sunny isles.
By nature of the sun.
But yes, so I will get back to you on that.
Okay.
That research.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sir. You take care.
You're welcome.
All right. We got another call. Let's see if we can activate this one quickly. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Husband Junior. How are you?
Husband Junior. Husband Junior. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I want to know something. What is jockey itch? What causes it? And what are the possible remedies for it?
Did you hear him, Doc?
Okay. It's called jock itch, where the men wear a jock strap to keep the boxers and those persons who do sports to keep the testes and the penis from hanging down, and so in line of danger in those sports. In the groin, that's where it is. It's usually a fungal infection that's in the groin, and it's treated with antifungals. Depending on the severity, it's either treated with topical medication, or if it's florid, meaning it's very, very bad, you can use oral medication, oral antifungals.
You got it, sir?
Yeah, other than the external medications, is there any orally that you can care for it? Of course, I will come with the recommendation.
Any what? I heard other than the external medication.
Yeah, if there's any that you can take orally, like tablets, anything like that.
Right. So what I had said is that usually it can be treated with creams, because what you try to do is, if you can use topical, meaning using it right on the area and you don't have to take medication by mouth, you do. But in some cases where the topical, the cream that you rub on, is not working, you can use an oral antifungal, because it's a fungus that causes the infection, tinea body. Corpus.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, sir. Thank you kindly. We're running short on time. I think we have another call on the line. Let's see if we can assist them. Hello.
Good evening, Gregson.
Yes, please.
And good evening to the good doc.
Yeah, there are two things I have heard in the last 3 minutes, which I just do not agree with. That is one, that because we're living in the tropics, we get abundance of vitamin D. One has to remember that the melanin in our skin protects us from all of the sun rays. And the only part of our body we can get vitamin D from the sun is in the palm of our hands or the sole of our feet. Those of us that are of this particular hue. And secondly, vitamin D deficiency would prohibit the absorption of vitamin C, which would eventually boost the immune system. And vitamin D can be had from the yolks of an egg, from fatty fish, from and also from cod liver oil. Plain and simple. Thank you for listening to me, and I hope I have cleared the air on this.
All right, is there any...
Okay, well, I am not 100% sure that vitamin D deficiency decreases the absorption of vitamin C and boosts the immune system. I am not certain. I didn't hear all of what you said, sir, and I'm so sorry that you came in so late. But it, like you said, the sun isn't the only source, in inverted commas, of vitamin D. We do get vitamin D from the foods that you did list, and which is why we still are encouraged to go outside to try to get some sunlight, right? It really does still help with the vitamin D stores for us here in the tropics. So it's not the only source, but I'm not certain about the relationship between vitamin D deficiency and the absorption of vitamins.
But calcium and magnesium for vitamin D. Calcium depends upon vitamin D for absorption in the body. Also magnesium.
Vitamin
B and iron. It's my mistake. Vitamin B and iron depends on vitamin C for absorption.
Right.
Yeah. So
thank you for that clarification.
Think about it?
No, I said thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, good. Right, very well. And let me say...
Okay, you have an email here.
Let me say I appreciate this program very much, and it is very informative. And kudos to you and Gregston.
Well, thank you kindly,
thank
sir.
Thank you so very much, sir.
Thank you kindly. But we must understand that... you have a good evening, sir. We must understand that we have to point the direction of the kudos to the good doctor. She does it of her free will. She is not compensated for it. And then she has to put up with me. So you have to... You really have to give her all the credit for this show. Huh? We are really out of time, but I see the phone here going. And let me be a nice guy. And let me see if I can access them quickly. Good evening.
Yes, Hope, again, the vitamin D that most people are talking about is not cholecalciferol, it is calcitriol. That is the one that fights the viruses and the viral attacks in the body, and that is the final product of an enzyme acting on cholecalciferol. It is 1,25-dihydroxy vitamin D3, which is called calcitriol, and not the ordinary cholecalciferol. So I'm not too sure if people that are mistaken, the one that is found to even assist in preventing some aspects of the HIV and calling it the ordinary cholecalciferol, it's calcitriol. So I was calling to tell the doctor to do the research on calcitriol, vitamin D3.
All right, Mr. Hope, thank you kindly for your contribution.
Yes, calcitriol is the name.
She heard you. Yes, I can see her face. She heard you. Okay, Mr. Hope, thank you kindly.
Thank you.
Once again, we're out of time. It's about 2 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, and we have to say a big thank you to the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce. Doc, I'm not sure if you have your topic for next week planned. If you do, you can let us know so that the other doctors can research it and come at you again this next week.
That would be. Kudos to all the docs who call in.
We appreciate everybody who call in. We appreciate you.
The show has already been planned, but there might be some changes. So you can listen out. We'll definitely let you know. Looking forward to being with you in the coming weeks. Remember to start revising for your quiz at the end of the year, mm-hmm. towards the end of December. But we're also going to have a kind of health independence quiz. So look out for that on the last Sunday in November.
So
just for a little fun.
So those are two tests that we have to look forward to.
Yes. So brush up on your independence knowledge and brush up on all that we would have done in the year for December.
Me and Hope can be ready for you. That's all I'm telling you.
All right. I'm waiting for now.
Thank you, Doc. That's Dr. Renee Boyce. She is our host. And she gives her free time to come here every Sunday evening to present to you the Better Health Radio Show. God's willing, next weekend, Sunday evening, 6 o'clock, once again, we'll welcome her back. You take care, Doc, and have a wonderful week ahead.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.